ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of Politics Now, the ABC's podcast unpacking the latest political news when it happens. Every weekday, you'll hear me and the sharpest political minds at the ABC.
Me, Jacob Greber.
Me, Raph Epstein.
Me, Claudia Long.
Me, David Spears.
And me, Fran Kelly, for The Party Room every Thursday.
So join me for Politics Now, download and follow on the ABC Listen app.
In a flurry of peace talks over the last week, Ukrainian officials have been desperately trying to avoid an unfair end to Russia's war, which has raged on for almost 4 years. They've been pushing back against a controversial proposal that would have required Ukraine to surrender significant territory. Today, international relations expert Rajan Menon on whether this latest round of diplomacy offers any real hope and what Kyiv may still have to give up. I'm Sydney Peed. On Gadigal Land, Sydney, this is ABC News Daily. Rajan, we're going to make sense of the flurry of talks over the last couple of weeks around ending the war in Ukraine. But first, let's just step back a moment to some comments made late last week by Russia's Vladimir Putin. Now, he says Moscow is ready for serious talks, but he says it's Ukraine that needs to withdraw from what he says is occupied territory.
Ukraine will.
Ukrainian troops will withdraw from the territories they occupy. That's when the hostilities will cease. If they don't withdraw, we'll achieve this by force of arms.
But of course, he's talking about Ukrainian land.
Yes, he has a very strange definition of the word occupied territories. He is talking about Ukrainian territories, which in his view are illegally occupied. Now, he has shifted ground a little bit because it seems to be the case that if Ukraine were to concede all of Donbass, that is, Lugansk, one of the provinces of Donbass, is fully occupied by the Russians, Donetsk is not. So he wants Ukraine to evacuate or abandon even the parts of Donetsk that he hasn't yet taken. Mm. And Trump seems amenable to this. We can talk about that. But that's kind of where things stand at the moment.
Okay, Rajan. Well, let's come back to that in a moment. But we've just seen US and Ukrainian officials meet for peace talks at a golf club in Florida, which is owned by Steve Witkoff, who's the US special envoy. So what can you tell me about what unfolded there?
So let's start with the lead up to that. There were the 28 points, as you'll remember, a plan that was hashed out between Witkoff and Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and the Russian envoy.
U.S. media is reporting a new 28-point peace plan, quietly approved by Donald Trump this week, was developed without Ukraine.
Under it, Ukraine would have to withdraw its troops from Donetsk province and limit the size of its army. The country would not be allowed to join NATO.
The 28-point plan pushed by Donald Trump has been condemned by Ukrainians as giving in to Russia.
So they came up with the 28-point plan. There were many things in it that the Ukrainians found objectionable. And they let the Americans know that. So now the negotiations are being held at Witkoff's club between the American side and the Ukrainian side. There is Witkoff, but luckily for the Ukrainians, he's joined by Marco Rubio. And we don't have the details exactly of what they've agreed to, but the Ukrainians say, and the Americans confirm, that, quote, good progress has been made.
So we had another very productive session building off Geneva, building off the events of this week. Our goal here is to end the war, but it's more than just to end the war. We don't just want to end the war, we also want to help Ukraine be safe forever, so never again will they face another invasion. And equally importantly, we want them to enter an age of true prosperity. This is delicate.
By that, I infer that some of the most objectionable parts of the 28 points have been modified in some way that more favor Ukraine. That's my sense. Now, we won't get the full measure of all this until Witkoff and Jared Kushner, again, Trump's son-in-law, travel to Moscow this coming week.
And of course, the tone of this discussion has changed so much from when we heard about this 28-point peace plan. Let's just delve into that plan a little bit, because it was inked by the US, but of course, it looked like it could have been written by the Kremlin. What about it really stood out to you?
What stood out to me above all was the demand that Ukraine surrender territory that the Russians haven't taken yet. On top of that, there was a proposal to reintegrate Russia into the West, into the G8. There were provisions for Russian-American cooperation on a whole host of things. In other words, it seemed to be the case that the Russians and the Americans had agreed not only to normalize relations, right, but to do so at Ukraine's expense, in the sense that the U.S.-Russian plan, done without consultation with the Ukrainians and over their head, required Ukraine to make some territorial sacrifices that they clearly were not consulted about and probably are in no mood to make.
And that plan, it really did blindside the Ukrainians, right? And it put President Zelensky in this very difficult spot. He said it was either the loss of dignity or the risk of losing a key partner.
This is one of the most difficult moments in our history. Ukraine may now face a very difficult choice, either losing its dignity or the risk of losing a key partner. And we are expected to trust someone who has already attacked us twice.
I mean, the Ukrainians are in a very difficult position because the United States is the kind of 800-pound gorilla in all this, if you will, even though the United States, since Trump's return to the White House for a second term, no longer gives Ukraine weapons directly. It will sell weapons to Europe that Europe can transfer to Ukraine. The problem has been that since the beginning of the war, that is starting with the Russian invasion in February 2022, the United States has given Ukraine in military assistance about $76 billion. That is about equal to all of the rest of Europe combined. So the withdrawal of American military support has been a huge blow to Ukraine. And one of the reasons the Russians have made the progress that they've made is, yes, Ukraine has its problems, lack of sufficient manpower and so on, but it has been put on the back foot by the sudden cutoff of direct American aid.
Rajan, Trump has been all over the place on the war in Ukraine. Sometimes he's expressing frustration with Putin, other times he's criticizing Ukraine and Zelensky. Is it clear to you whether the Trump administration will keep advancing Russia's key demands, as we saw in that 28-point peace plan, or are we seeing now a shift that's become more sympathetic to Ukraine again?
Hard to say, but in the long trajectory of things, there's no question which side in this conflict Trump has a softer spot for. Contrast, for example, the way he received Putin in August in Anchorage. Red carpet, clapping while Putin came down the red carpet.
We really made some great progress today. I've always had a fantastic relationship with President Putin, with Vladimir. Again, Mr. President, I'd like to thank you very much, and we'll speak to you very soon and probably see you again very soon.
Versus that now notorious meeting in the White House between Zelensky and Trump, where Trump, joined by Vice President Vance, humiliated Zelensky in public.
You're not in a good position. You don't have the cards right now. With us, you start having
cards.
Right now, you don't have your playing cards. You're gambling with World War III.
So there's no question that Trump, I think, favors Russia, and every proposal that he's put forward, including the most recent ones, have favored Russia. I'll give you one more example. Whenever Witkoff goes to Moscow, he comes back, in effect, almost parroting Russian talking points. So I think they have good reason to worry about where the U.S. is going and to what extent they will be sold out by the Trump administration.
What about Europe? Because European leaders are still well and truly on the side of Ukraine. But
yes.
Do they have enough influence and power to make sure their vision of a peace plan goes anywhere? Because they've also essentially been sidelined by the US as well.
Correct. So they developed their own proposal, as you know, one much more favorable to Ukraine, much more balanced. So from Washington's standpoint, at least Washington under President Trump, the Europeans count for absolutely nothing.
And so what do you think about Volodymyr Zelensky's plan here? Because he's under a lot of pressure, not just at home, but on the world stage as well.
If I had to guess, I would say the following. I think it is going to be virtually impossible for the Ukrainians to militarily take back all of the land that they've lost, even since 2022. The war is coming up in February. It'll be 4 years of war. It's been an enormous devastation done to Ukraine. And both sides have lost huge numbers of soldiers. So I think that a territorial compromise that is seen as equitable, I think President Zelensky could sell. But a deal in which Ukraine has to just hand over territory that it still holds, for example, I don't think he would accept, nor would it be sellable, if you will, to the Ukrainian public. But I think there's sufficient war weariness in Ukraine that a deal that is perceived as equitable will be accepted. And it doesn't involve just territory changing hands. That is, what will be the future of Ukraine's security? Because we may think, or some people have said, after a war like this, Russia will never attack again. But if you're Ukrainian, you see, you can't take that for granted. So the Ukrainians have held out for security guarantees. Ideally, they'd also like to join NATO. That's a red line for Putin. I also think that's not going to happen because you need unanimity within NATO to admit a new member. Mm. And if anything, NATO is more divided now in 2025 than it was in 2008 when it first kind of opened the door for Ukrainian membership without actually giving it membership. So if I had to say what the parameters of an agreement would be, it would be a compromise on territories, but not a giveaway on Ukraine's part, probably Ukrainian neutrality, plus some form of security guarantees. Now, who exactly will participate in those guarantees and what those guarantees precisely mean, all of this still needs to be hammered out.
Let's just talk a bit more about these guarantees, because that will be key to any deal that can be negotiated. Would Russia ever agree to it if it involved foreign troops on the ground as a so-called reassurance force?
There's no chance that the Russians will agree to a deal where foreign troops are stationed in Ukraine in perpetuity or permanently. I think a security guarantee would have to be some version of NATO's self-defense article, which requires that the alliance in some form come to the assistance of a fellow member that's been attacked, but without it being a NATO guarantees. The United States will not give Ukraine a security guarantee, nor will it join with other countries that will. So it means some subset of European countries.
Okay, well, the U.S. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff is heading to Russia to continue these discussions with Vladimir Putin. So what do you think, Rajan? Will this plan being negotiated, will it go anywhere, or are we going to see another attempt sort of fall in a heap, do you think?
It all depends on what the modified plan is now after Witkoff and Rubio have met with the Ukrainian delegation. The kind of commonplace view has been that Ukraine has to sign on the dotted line that Putin hands them because it's got all kinds of problems and Russia can fight on forever. I'm very skeptical of that idea because Russia has a litany of economic problems. It has something like 800,000, some say a million casualties, that is dead and wounded, not all dead. Oil prices have been falling for the fifth week in a row and are at the second lowest point since the war began. Russia's second largest oil company just reported a 70% plunge in net income this year. The budget deficit is increasing, and I could go on and on. Russian gains have been really difficult to come by. And that is another reason why I think it's wrong to say, well, Putin holds all the cards and Zelensky holds none. I don't think that's the case. And I think the Ukrainians can hold out for a deal that is much better than the kind of deal that Putin ideally would like to have.
Rajan Menon is a professor emeritus of international relations. Daily, we'll be back again tomorrow. Thanks for listening.